So May, we met at like a Best Gay Awards thing.
Yeah. What? So it's the LGBT Awards.
Is did you win Best Gay? I didn't win Best Gay.
I did not win Best Gay.
I was not good. I've tried so hard.
I felt like Stephen Fry won Best Gay at the end of the night. He did that speech and yeah, but I was glad to see someone else there who was a bit confused by the whole event.
Yes, I looked around. I always look for the most awkward person in the room, and I find solace in the fact it's not always me.
Yeah, I was sat at a table with like Ellie Goulding, and everyone kept coming up for selfies with her, and I was just sat staring vacantly. Like, what am I meant? I guess I'm meant to be charming in some way, but I had no social skills that night.
But I sort of, I gravitate towards the people that aren't the ones getting the selfies that have the perfect, whatever, the perfect Insta life.
Yeah.
being slightly marginal dwelling creature myself.
Are you? Yeah. I never know what to wear to those things too.
No, I panic.
Yeah.
But you're young, so I assume that might be easier, but maybe not.
Clothes are hard for me. I think I have my casual look down, but formal things, I'll say no to going to a wedding. Because I'm too stressed about what to wear.
I do the same. Yeah. I panic about it.
Yeah.
Because also clothes, I don't know, I hope, well, at least in my head, I resist definition. But as soon as I put on smart clothes, I feel that other people are defining me.
Totally. That's so true, yeah. And it's a narrower, you have a narrower options with formal clothes.
What do you go for?
Well, I was thinking of having something tailored, like a nice, because I guess I like kind of men's clothes, but then I don't want to be in a full suit or a tux. I don't know, so I thought I might design something. Is that
perfect?
Yeah, you know what, have you ever seen Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet?
I have.
So you know there's a scene at a costume party and Leo's wearing a knight costume.
Yeah,
I always wanted that, so
do
I thought I could just wear like a chainmail kind of thing. And then I looked into it, and it's all tons of queer women are looking for this costume.
Looking for chainmail.
Looking for this specific Leonardo DiCaprio look.
Did that depress you or excite you? You have company, or you're sad because you wanted to be the outlier?
I found it reassuring. And there's one German woman in Berlin who's making them, but they cost like $8,000 or something. Shit. So I have to think about it.
My friend Andy Crid used to make chainmail, and he was on his own. He was at a time when nobody was looking for it.
Yeah.
And he just went to college and he said, I want to make this stuff. And he would just sit there fashioning endless knight's outfits.
That's amazing. I like that's a dying skill, right? I like the idea of like an old blacksmith hammer and sparks flying. And
well, maybe next time both of us fail to win Best Gay,
you
could be wearing chainmail and everyone will be so...
Yeah.
I always think that just to be in the room, everyone's done pretty well.
Yeah, kind of, totally, you know, totally.
Everyone's had their own battles.
Yeah.
It feels a little strange giving a trophy to one of them at the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a strange thing. And then it's sponsored by all these companies who have questionable practices as well. Yeah, but you know, it was nice to be there. Also, nice to sit at a table with Ellie Goulding. That was cool.
Yeah, she's a good egg, apparently. I've never met her, but
she seems good. She seems like she's trying hard to be good in the world, you know.
That's all you can be. You can't succeed at anything, God only knows.
No,
there's not enough power. One doesn't have, I mean, one's own agency is so limited, but I do try. I got into an argument last night. We should point out that we're recording this in the centre of London town in the midst of the Extinction Rebellion kickoff, the beautiful kickoff. And I had a row with a cab driver who just was so against it. Mm. And I just thought, but they're trying.
Yeah.
It might be affecting your business, and I can see how that's frustrating.
Yeah.
But they're trying to do something. They're trying to raise awareness. They're trying to... And you can drill down on, oh, yes, but, you know, they'll get carted away in, you know, diesel-fueled police cars.
Yeah.
They take flights. They might have kids. They eat at McDonald's. But they're trying to break out of complacency.
Yeah. And I think that level of panic and that anger that people are responding with is so telling. It's just because they have no counter-argument and they're threatened and they don't want to change the way they live. So... yeah, and I heard, not to bring up Louis C.K., but I heard someone put some set of his online recently, like recorded some warm-up gig of his, and he was saying, I think, oh, when I was a teenager, we did acid and we're rebelling in these ways, and these kids are so annoying and righteous, and they're all they talk about is gender and the environment. And it's like, that is so much more revolutionary than just doing acid. Like,
exactly, which benefits no one. I mean, you go on your own very insular journey on acid. You're not kind of trying to save the world. I mean, no one raises awareness when they're high.
Yeah, totally. So I'm really all for it.
I think me too. Good. Yeah, I mean, I sort of feel it's such a harumphy kind of old curmudgeon's position to take against youth. You know, just as you say, just as a, because there is no counter argument. It's just a knee jerk thing of, oh, children these days. Children these days are smarter and more switched on and more careful.
Yeah.
Than I ever was.
Absolutely. And it seems to come naturally to them. And compassion seems to come more naturally. And things like bullying are uncool now. And it used to be cool.
Were you bullied?
Not really. I didn't really hang out with people my own age, because I started doing comedy when I was about 13. So, and then dropped out of school. So I didn't really give anyone a chance to bully me. And I also was saying on stage all the worst things that about myself that anyone could say. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I kind of said them
Which
first.
Seems to be a particular sort of female trope, I think.
Yeah.
Because you get to yourself before anyone has the chance.
And at the time, like, I always looked pretty queer. So I think that still happens a lot. As a queer comp, you go on stage and you have to say it first because everyone's thinking it. So I think that I see a lot of, maybe that's changing a bit. But
do you have to say it now, do you think?
I don't anymore, but I definitely in the beginning had to immediately say, I know I look like this, and I know everyone's noticed it, because otherwise there's a tension in the room, like, does she know she looks like that?
Like, what though?
I know it's all changing for sure,
but it's interesting that somebody like you, who I certainly don't associate with feeling queasy about identity, would feel that you have to come on and the first thing you have to do is make essentially an apology.
Yeah.
Or, as you say, diffuse tension that's been created by other people's kind of potential prejudice.
Yeah. I think it's taken a while to get there, though, because it's 20 years now doing stand-up.
So why stand-up at 13? I mean, that's crazy.
What a mistake. I don't know.
A mistake.
Well, I don't know. It's all I ever wanted to do. And then I started taking an improv class and then loved it. Yeah. Did you ever do stand-up? I know you were in Footlights.
Yeah, I did a bit. It's not my... I like improv.
Yeah, I love improv.
So I'd be happy just going, I don't know, to the De Montfort in Leicester, or going to wherever, and just doing 2 hours of improv.
Mm.
And that for me is my safe space. So I would go on stage and there'd be no adrenaline spike.
Yeah, really?
None.
And that's with people or on your own?
Just on my own. But happily with people also.
Yeah.
Because the audience would be my people, do you know what I mean? And
we'd
just go through stuff.
Heaven. Because that's, you're just being yourself as well.
That's the thing. For me, the reason I do anything is to try and, this sounds counterintuitive, but to find authenticity.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to find it, you should just generate it. But I'm always looking for a feeling that resonates as authentic. And when you write jokes, and I've never been a really good joke writer, by the time I'd get to say them on stage, I was bored, and they felt they were othered. They felt they were coming from a different place or a different voice.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, to answer your question, no, I've never redone it. When I have done it, I've been not great at it.
Yeah.
Because I don't really like jokes, because people don't speak in jokes.
Yeah, true. And my favourite comedians do a lot of crowd work and are very much themselves. And I've started doing improvised stand-up now, and I'm really enjoying that. So
how does that work for you? How do you kick that night off? Because you'd be able to get the audience kind of in a good space to be able to play with you.
Yeah, they write down questions as they come in and then put them in a bucket. And then it's so nice. They're so forgiving when they know, like, and we just chat and then I answer the questions and I do weird plays. But it's kind of reinvigorated. Like, it's reminded me why I wanted to start performing in the first place, because you have to kind of rely more on, I don't know, I guess at some point someone said I was funny when I was 13, but I kind of forget who that person was or why I was funny or what, you know what I mean?
Mm.
And so it reminds you of that, because you have to rely on just personality and being silly.
But people can be told they're funny at 13. It takes a particular type of person to then go and book a gig.
Yeah.
So I'm not one of these people, but you're a person that sort of actualizes.
Yeah.
You know, you make real what you want to do.
Yeah.
I sort of blunder around and eventually a stage door opens and I find myself in a theatre and I just chat for a couple of hours and then leave.
Really? I don't believe that.
Well, I don't know. A mate of mine said something which felt true, which said you just back into the limelight, which I really don't. I'm just sort of always going, oh, this is awful. Hello. So I can't, I'm addicted to it, but I find it very, at the same time, I'm extremely awkward about it.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely never been, sometimes I read biographies of comedians who are like, I just have to get on stage every night and they're out gigging. I've never had that. If a gig is cancelled, I'm thrilled. I'd love to stay home.
I have to be at home with my dog and that's my main thing, and I work out how many nights a week I can achieve that goal.
Yeah. What kind of dog?
Well, this, the Staffy.
Great.
I managed to put this through a wash with multiple tissues, so I've come out looking, I don't know, like I've been in the middle of a tissue nado.
What does it say? That's more Staffies. Oh my god.
Filthy little ex-drug dog.
They're beautiful. What do you mean ex-drug?
Well, like, she was an ex-drug dealer's dog.
Oh wow.
So in the park when kids are smoking weed, she'll go and sit next to them and look
really?
Lovingly.
Yeah. Oh wow.
And they'll freak out. Yeah. So
they're such kind dog Staffies. I like big dogs you can kind of thump and hug, and I don't like little yappy ones.
She's filth. I mean, she's just got teats down to the ground. She's had about a billion puppies.
Oh.
She's taught me so much about kindness and patience. I'm not a very patient person. I have sort of ADHD, so I'm constantly sort of rolling on to the next thing. And just sitting with a dog, suddenly 20 minutes can go by and you haven't gone on to the next thing.
Yeah.
Just been in this sort of meditative state. I absolutely love it. But for me, yeah.
She's lying on your lap, farting, and you can't move her. Yeah.
She needs to be held like a baby.
Yeah. Oh, God, I love it.
She has abandonment issues.
Oh, stop. I need a dog, I think.
You do?
Yeah.
But how would that work in your life?
It wouldn't. But one day it will.
Yeah, you must.
And as soon as it will, I'm getting one.
It's life-changing.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
I want a big, dumb, fat dog that just waits for me. And is so excited to see me. Yeah, that's what I want.
Yeah, that's had a terrible life and you've saved it so that even in the darkest of hours you can feel good every time you open the door.
Yeah, it's so narcissistic, this God complex. But
it's all narcissistic. I've saved you and I want reminding you every night. Yeah.
My neighbours, I live in a building and I've never known my neighbours, but I got to know my neighbours and they have a greyhound, rescue greyhound, that was living in a concrete box its whole life, and it's really docile and sleepy. I thought they have to be always running, but
20 minutes a day and then they're done.
Yeah, so I've been looking after that sometimes if they go out. Arthur comes over and he's like,
that's good for you.
Just heartbreaking. I just touch his nose.
How many gigs do you do a week then, if you're saying that? Is it compulsive for you to be a comic?
These days not many, because I've been filming stuff more, and so I'm doing once a week now. I'm doing an hour work in progress of new stuff, but that's I sometimes go weeks, and then I'll have a burst where I do like four or five. But it's mostly if friends ask me these days. I don't know.
The benefit.
But now I'm sort of building towards a new show, so I think I'll have to gig more. But
and does that fill you with? Is it a stressful thing to start a new project?
Yeah, because I've really been enjoying improvising, so the idea of writing a new hour is a bit daunting, and you have to think, well, what do I want to say and where am I in my life? And yeah, because like you say, I want it to be authentic and reflecting where I am now,
and that changes all the time
every day, so you know.
And so that's why I find it very hard to commit things to paper that are personal.
Yeah,
because like I remember the most inauthentic experience I ever had was coming out publicly. Because I was sleeping with a cameraman at the time.
Oh, wow.
But it became clear that I kind of had to do this ludicrous, outmoded sort of rite of passage declaration.
Yeah.
Because everyone was swirling and going, we think she's one of those.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, my parents had been told, you know, years before, and
yeah,
couldn't give them monkeys. But it just felt like I have to do this because it is on one level extremely important, but on a level it's really wrong. It's a really wrong time.
Totally. And also, did you feel, well, like if you're sleeping with the cameraman, it then coming out kind of bulldozes over the nuances of your own life.
Yeah, and I felt bad for him. I mean, we're mates, and I think he would laugh along with me when I say, you know, we were not the loves of each other's lives.
Yeah.
That was not what was going on there. But
did you think about coming out as bi, or
it didn't really, there wasn't a thing.
Yeah, it wasn't a thing. Yeah.
So this is what interests me. I mean, obviously, I know you wrote the book, which is Can Everyone Please Calm Down? This is a long title. Can Everyone Please Calm Down?
I know.
Guide to 21st Century Sexuality.
Yeah.
It's a long title.
Oh, I don't know.
But it's a lovely thing to see how it has changed and how my thing was always stop making me say who I am, because by the time it's out there, I may have changed my mind.
Yeah, totally.
And you have the right to change your mind.
Yeah.
In each rolling second.
And then even by the time that book was published, it was outdated. You know, it's changing so fast. So that was an interesting
experience. How many initials now does the LGBTQIA plus?
I think that's it. QIAA maybe?
Okay.
But I just say LGBT plus, which is the same number as letters as RSPCA, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's sort of, you know.
Different outreach team, but yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, for anyone wishing to call the helpline, there is a difference.
Yeah. It's a tricky thing with labels, because I get their importance too, and visibility is so important. And if you're struggling, that can be so useful to have the language to find a community and all that. But in my own life, I found them kind of annoying.
Yeah,
because it's always someone else grilling you about it, and yeah, as you say, it can change all the time, and
it's interesting, you've become the spokesperson for, you've been labeled as the spokesperson for not having labels.
Yeah,
to me, it's like, you know, you're the go-to person now.
Yeah,
which must be kind of annoying.
I just sort of have to keep learning. Like, that book was aimed at teenagers, and then it was interesting promoting it and really feeling the generational divide. Like, I went and spoke to a bunch of teenagers, and they were just amazing, and they were all like, yeah, this is common sense, and all these jocks standing up, like sporty boys, and saying, I think I'm straight at the moment, but how can I be a better ally for my trans friend? I was like, this is insane, this is so different to my experience. And then that night I did the same talk but for a Radio 4 audience, and they were furious, and the Q&A was so different of people's.
They were furious.
Yeah, a lot of people stressed about trans people, and so it's just such an interesting, I think this next generation's, they're on it.
I think they're on it. I look at my niece who's 16, and she's all over it.
Really?
Yeah. She's all over it. And some of the, I've got a lot, in a weird way, subconsciously, I think a lot of my validation has come from kids like her.
You know?
Just, you know, when she was 6 or 7, just excitedly running down the stairs to the spare room where I was sleeping with my partner, and just getting into bed with us and going to sleep was just more validation than anybody else could give us, a wordless validation.
That's so nice.
That everything is just the same.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
There's no need for anyone else to get anxious or for their hearts to beat fast over what I choose to do in the privacy of my own home. The thing I take from that long title book is just calm down, and you're right. Yeah. It's just, when did everybody get so anxious about something so irrelevant to their own life?
Yeah, and it's so politicized now, and so I worry that it's taking the fun out of we're talking about, basically love and sex, right?
Yeah.
The most universal and best things in the world. So, I hope you gotta have a sense of humor about it too. But I liked what I read, something that you said about that being gay is like the 47th most interesting thing about you, and I always felt that too, and my parents were really good like that, so I think that's important too.
Yeah, I remember saying, I mean, I said that probably quite a while ago now, and it was just at the stage where I would do you know, a bit of press about something, and it would come back, and it would just have my name, my age, and the word gay.
Yeah.
And
like a permanent prefix to your name. Yeah.
Yeah, like those were my top trumps. And like, does anyone else want to play? What are you? How old are you? You know, Christ, she's old. And that has changed, actually.
Yeah.
Now I never see it. And that's either because I've been, you know, around so long that nobody cares.
Yeah.
Or genuinely attitudes have changed and there isn't that need to define and delineate. And
I think it is changing, yeah.
I think so. I hope so. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by HelloFresh. HelloFresh is the UK's leading recipe box service, delivering fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door.
It's the easy, convenient way to cook delicious dinners from scratch. Perfect for anyone who doesn't have time to prepare their own meals or just isn't very good at cooking. You get to choose your favourites from 19 recipes every week, including rapid recipes which will be ready in 20 minutes or less. They offer family favourites like cheeseburger and wedges, as well as world cuisine and even lower calorie balanced recipes. In my first box, I got a delicious beetroot, green bean and orange salad, which is from the Balance range. It was super fast and easy to put together, and there were no wasted ingredients. It's flexible, so you can change the size of your delivery, as well as when and where you want it delivered. To sign up for your first box, head to hellofresh.co.uk, choose a box, a delivery slot, and add your favourite recipes. All their fresh ingredients come direct from suppliers, pre-portioned, so there's no food waste. There's also a great selection of veggie options. HelloFresh are offering our listeners £60 off four boxes. Visit www.hellofresh.co.uk and enter the code HOUR at the checkout to enjoy delicious dinners without the drama.
You've just filmed your Netflix show. Is it in the can?
It's in the can. So tell me about it. Yeah, I'm really nervous. I've never acted before. I was in way over my head, but I had the best time. So I think it comes out in February or March.
So what's the premise?
Well, it's about I play a version of myself. So a comedian called May, who's
a version of yourself.
Yeah.
Do you mean a photocopy?
Yeah, pretty much. Who's a recovering addict and gets into a relationship with a previously straight woman, and it's just a romantic comedy about addiction and love, and it gets dark in places, but I think it's funny. It's got Lisa Kudrow playing my mom. That was insane. I know. I'm a huge, huge fan of The Comeback, this show that she did that was mostly, it seems improvised. Maybe it was scripted, but it's just an amazing show called The Comeback that she did after Friends. And obviously, I love Friends. It was amazing.
So what did you learn from the actors around you? What was the big tip?
Well, I just kind of thought, I mean, you've acted. I thought...
Oh, that's a loose term.
I kind of thought... you just arrange your... I was like, how do I... So I'm doing a scene where I'm very sad. So how do I arrange my face to look sad? And what facial expression... I was obsessed with facial expressions. And then everyone was like, no, just feel sad and your face will do it. So that was eye-opening.
So you started... This is amazing. So you started with just the muscular contortion of the face.
Yeah.
That's how you act.
Yeah, totally. Because I was like...
This is brand new.
Well, definitely in my... it's not like a... I don't know. But then I found it... I ended up finding it. All my friends are actors, and so I was pretty always judgmental when they were like, "Oh, I'm so drained from doing this play. I'm just emotionally exhausted." And I was like, "Oh, really? From pretending to be sad for an hour, and now you're tired?" But actually, it was very intense.
The hours are long.
Long hours, and my character relapses in it, so I had to do a lot of like snorting fake coke and stuff, which I found really difficult and intense. So that was intense, but it is funny. I promise. It sounds really bleak, but
no. I mean, I also think all great comedy has to have a counterpoint. Otherwise, it's relentless and sinister almost. It's like, what are you selling here? This is nothing like real life.
Yeah, it's eerie.
That is a big deal, though, for a recovering addict to recreate.
Yeah, I didn't really think that through when I wrote it.
That's horrible.
Yeah, I guess I. It's been so long and. But I think for most people who've had specifically like a coke problem, or I don't know, any drug maybe, but you imagine all the time what it would be like to relapse and what that would look like and how you'd feel. And so in a way, it was cathartic to do that, and it felt awful. So that was
That's good.
Great, well, don't do that. But yeah, very strange.
So how long have you been clean? How long have you stayed clear?
Give or take, I'd say about 10 years. Yeah, I was mostly my teens were very explosive, and then mellowed out.
And it was coke was your poison.
Yeah.
I've never done coke.
Good. It's horrible and horrible for the world. Like, it's ruining communities in South America.
But so are avocados.
Yeah, that's so true.
They're hard as a mainline. But
I just learned that.
Yeah.
So should we not be eating them?
I'll let you know in a month. I'm off to Mexico to deal with some cartel, genuinely.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, who control the whole of the...
What, for a documentary or something?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that's so interesting.
Yeah, so I will find out. But yeah, no, it's never been anything that would get me more anxious. No, thanks.
Yeah. It must have been around a lot. Did you see it a lot?
A lot, actually.
In TV and... Yeah.
And yeah, well, you know what it's like. You'd go into those rooms before gigs and...
Mm.
I always used to think, God, it's made your face change.
Mm-hmm.
Something goes across the face like a shadow, like a cloud.
Yeah.
Like a possession, actually.
There's tension in the mouth and... Yeah, it's horrible.
It's a kind of darkness. And I just thought, no, I don't want that. But I was always, my addiction was always booze.
Right, yeah.
Booze and weed, and it's so I would feel calm, but also like I could just be anywhere and do anything.
Yeah.
So superhuman. So luckily, no, because I'd be dead by now, because I have a hugely addictive personality.
Yeah.
I would be dead.
Yeah, for me it was stimulants, so just I focus. I mean, I was also an insecure teenager, and then here were all these confident adults with, and it made me feel confident and focused, and so I think that's what it was. But I've been reading this guy Gabor Mate. He's this really good addiction specialist, and he always talks about not thinking about why the addiction, because but what's missing, why the pain that is causing you to want to change the present moment so drastically. So that's an interesting thing. You think, what does this give me? What am I lacking?
But you had, by your own admission, you had really sort of really cool parents who were very open-hearted and liberal and accepting. Mm. So where's the hole? Where's the gap?
I don't know. Well, I don't know. I mean, they were great, and I don't know. I wanted to get out of my own body. I always felt. Yeah, anxious and insecure all through my childhood, I think. I don't know, and who knows why. I mean,
it just gives you you're right. You just jettison out of your preoccupations into a sort of what you perceive to be a bigger, braver, new world. And
exactly. And then so quickly it spirals. I still have that impulse that, you know.
So where does it redirect? Because I'm always interested in, because as you say, absolutely. The addiction is not the thing. The addiction is the manifestation.
Yes.
It's the underneath bit. It's the inciting incident, if you were writing a screenplay.
Yeah.
It's the cold open.
Yeah.
What is... To hunt that down is the thing, because if you don't, then you just will find other things to be addicted to.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess I'm a bit of a workaholic now, and... What's the root cause? I don't know. I'll get back to you.
I suppose that's always been my trajectory, is to find out.
Mm.
Mine's always love and relationships. And
yeah, same. Yeah. Oh, that fills the void for you.
My mate, who also said I back into the limelight, so she is very perceptive.
Yeah, you've got to pay this person for their time.
She's incredible. God, I love her. She said to me, the thing is, Perks, is when you're the monkey swinging on the vine and you're grabbing at the next one, you've only ever got one hand on each.
She said,
you spend your life just with one hand on something. You're just half in everything.
Wow, that's great.
Just try being 100% in something.
Like, yeah.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds good, but I don't want to do that.
That's amazing.
Because the one hand is always that, the one is affixed, but the other one is just grasping for something else.
Yeah.
And it's whether it's grasping for, you know, a better gig.
Yeah, or a more intense relationship.
Exactly. Yeah. Drama. God, I mean, thankfully.
Same.
Age is incredible. When you get old, that you can't physically do the drama, and that's what's great. Because the tendency is to still try and do it.
Yeah.
But it's just, your just body's going, no, not this again.
Yeah.
I can't do this escalation of insanity.
Absolutely.
But I always want to. And it's finding out the why is,
yeah.
But it's interesting how humans will often default to, once the stimulants or the downers or the boo, whatever it is, once you combat that, then love is the next thing. The tendrils go out.
Yeah.
And it's like, love me, accept me, you know. But I sort of think being in love, you present your best version of yourself. So the first bit.
The first bit's the best. You're doing this amazing performance all the time and you see yourself through someone else's eyes as this magical person. And and vice versa. And yeah, and then when all the depths of yourself are being brought out, and then there's things to dislike, you're like, oh no, wait, what about those early stages?
Yeah, I like that first bit.
Yeah,
and the hands going out.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I mean, I'm sort of serial monogamous, so I don't play about, but there's always like a Rizzler paper between each singular experience.
Yeah, I have been a serial monogamous and very intense true love, and then now I've been single for a couple of years and in trying to enjoy that and not obsess over that part of my life and let it dominate the rest.
So how does, as someone who's addicted to love and relationships, how does that work? How do you stop the oxytocin from dominating?
Yeah, I think I've been so busy with work, and I really cared about that Netflix show that I just made. So the past 4 years, I've been really obsessed with it.
All that.
Yeah, and I was filming in Manchester and running around, and so that has helped. And then now there's this strange quiet after, now that it's in the can. I'm like, yeah.
So what will you do? What will fill the void?
I think work still, and then I'm trying to. I'm out there. I'm dating. I've been on the dating apps now though, and. So
is that dismal or okay?
It's pretty grim. Yeah, it's just so unlikely that you're going to meet someone who you have lots in common with. And
but doesn't everybody know who you are? And that has its own baggage, doesn't it?
Yeah, someone screenshotted our chats and posted them.
That's
so
nice.
I have to be really careful, I think. Yeah. So yeah. But how else are you going to go on lots of dates?
Listen, you just have to work less.
Yeah.
That's the thing. When all this, you know, the Netflix thing's out and there's a big hurrah about it and everybody loves it, then you can just go, phew, okay, I'm going to write a second series. But while I'm doing that, I'm going to play and I'm going to have fun and I'm going to be in real world scenarios.
Yeah, I just went to Canada for a couple of weeks and that was really nice. Saw my old pals, walked around and didn't do any work and didn't think about work at all. So that was good. I went to Medieval Times where people joust and you watch it. Yeah, and you eat with your hands. And
you're obsessed with chainmail. That's what it is. You just want to be a knight.
I did buy a sword there.
What do you mean? You don't chuck that in like...
I bought a plastic...
It's too casual.
Yeah.
You bought a sword.
Yeah. But it's just a plastic sword, but I was waving it around and... so that was really fun. Have you ever seen those things, Medieval Times? And they actually properly joust.
Yeah, full on.
Yeah. And I said to one of the staff members, I was like, just the horses are fine, right? Just tell me that the horses are enjoying it. And she was like, they love it.
Sure. That's what they say about the gorilla that's furiously wanking itself to death in the zoo. Yeah. Oh, he loves it.
He loves it.
It's his favorite thing, just to be incarcerated for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
But what, so apart from the fact that you love chainmail, why do you like formal entertainment?
Yeah, well, in terms of like, you know, staying away from damaging things like stimulants and stuff, I do fill my time with like organized fun activities, like a lot of escape rooms or
I've never done one.
Oh, you have to. It's so fun.
What's the best one? Can you say? Are we allowed to say, Dan? We can say.
There's one called Clue Quest that's pretty good.
Where is it? In town?
King's Cross.
Oh my God, I've got
to
do it.
So you go in and you're locked in a room and you have an hour to escape and it's just a room like this and you think, well, there's no way I'm getting out of here. And then you start looking behind chairs and there's little clues and there's locks and keys.
How many do you do at a time?
You can do up to six people or so, but
oh,
I think you want to go four people. Dan, have you? You've got to do it.
I really want to do that.
Yeah.
The thing I really want to do is, because my addiction in a way, well, I have lots of them, but challenging myself.
Mm.
So doing things that I'm totally terrified of doing and accepting every dare.
Yeah.
Like once my then partner, we were in Mallorca on a cliff and she said, jump, I dare you. And I did. And I atomized my coccyx.
Oh my God.
Imagine bones in a bag just being smashed to dust and then getting up. Yeah. My ass bone was just pulverized because I didn't hit the water straight. It was like 25 meter drop.
Oh.
And I just thought, well, I can't see rocks. Fuck it, I'm gonna just go for it.
And you landed just on
badly.
Yeah. Oh my God.
It was
excruciating.
Searing.
And then could you still swim after? Like, were you...
No, I sort of doggy paddled up, and then the locals were sort of half laughing and half calling an ambulance. Oh. And then I had to sit on one of those weird like pile cushions, like a donut, because my tailbone was just screwed.
Oh, I can feel it now.
Yeah, like, it's
my
bad.
Tailbone's hurting. Yeah.
And when it's cold, it really is.
Still.
Yeah, I wince a bit.
Wow.
So I sort of permanently have to...
That's a adrenaline junkie stuff. Like, yeah, yeah.
But also, whether it's gigging or like the improv thing, also, yeah. Even though I don't feel the adrenaline, I think it's still part of that challenging sort of thing.
Yeah.
Are there any untapped social experiences you really fancy doing?
I'm not into skydiving or heights or anything like that. No, thanks.
Unless somebody dares me, in which case I will have to do it.
Really? So yeah. Are you competitive? Is that part
no,
of it?
No. Okay. No, it's just, it's I don't know what it is. Anything I'm dared to do, I just do it.
Yeah.
And it's not good.
Right.
Bad things have happened. Really bad things have happened.
I wonder if I'd get into like live action role playing. You know, people do that. That's sort of medieval and they dress up and it's improv, basically. And
like battle reenactment?
No, like... I think it's like someone's a knight, someone's a wench.
It always comes back. It's the same thing. It's just... This is what the addiction stems from.
Yeah.
Is you grew up and you realised you were not a knight. You were not of the knightly class. You were never going to wear the chainmail. And everything stemmed from this.
Do you think in a past life I was a knight or something?
There are people online who will do that shit for you.
Yeah. Anything you want is online, isn't it?
Oh, God, yeah.
You can pay to have people kidnap you and just have that experience. They bung you in a van and drive you away.
What were you doing the night that you found that on Google?
I've been really going mad on Google. And the other day I thought I should audit a course. Like I should learn something new, maybe a history course. And I went online.
I'm telling you, I know it's going to be medieval period.
It's going to be, yeah, 12th century. but then I was Googling and I found... this magician called Justin, who'll come to your house and teach you tricks. And I hired him. He came over on Saturday.
What?
Yeah, it was only 60 quid. And he came for 2 hours.
Was it just the two of you?
No, I had a couple of friends there.
Okay.
And he taught us about 9 tricks. It was about the skill level of like a 13-year-old at a bar mitzvah. Yeah, but it was amazing. So I'm just filling my time in various ways. But you should get Justin round.
I want Justin round.
Yeah, card tricks, a thing with a coin.
A thing with a coin.
Yeah.
I'm telling you now, you have a way to go.
Yeah.
Before you could wear that dazzling jeweled waistcoat and go from table to table to groups of disinterested people at events.
Yeah. Do you guys want to see a thing with a coin?
Yeah. May does. She does the card thing. She does the coin thing. I think that's it. Yeah.
I think I'm just trying to improve my stock so that I get a good spouse. You know, I think if I know about 9 magic tricks, then at a dinner party, I'll get a better spouse.
That interests me because for me, magicians aren't always sexual catnip. That's all I'm going to say. And if there are any magicians listening, then no disrespect to your illustrious profession.
Yeah.
But I don't always associate that profession with high-octane sexual attraction. But you're right. I mean, I'm a huge fan of self, you know, improvement.
Yeah.
And the idea that you're right, you know, you have to constantly, you know, think, how can I be better? I'm learning Spanish.
Are you? And then is it...
I just want to speak Spanish in someone's ear. I don't even know whose ear.
See, isn't that just interesting, though? Because it's not really about yourself. It's about other people.
Trying to impress.
That's how I
always say that what we do is basically we're trying to... It's a cult of us and we're just trying to recruit.
Yeah.
So every night you go out there and you're just hoping that through the miasma of shit that you're farting out, that someone will sign up.
Yeah, 100%.
That's tragic, isn't it?
And then if it goes wrong, it's just a self-esteem firing squad because you're like, well, they don't like me as a person.
But I guess that's the starting point anyway.
Yeah.
So you're just back to square one. I mean, for me, it's just it affirms some long-held beliefs.
Totally.
I guess.
Yes.
But you're right. No, the Spanish is just...
It's to whisper in someone's ear.
Yeah.
I did a 2-year diploma program in shiatsu massage therapy when I was 20. I got my diploma. It cost 6 grand. It took 2 years of my life, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. I've never done it since. And that was purely...
To be an amazing masseur.
To be an amazing partner to someone. I thought, this is going to...
This is extraordinary. We've really mined in now to something. So for 2 years and 6 grand.
Yeah.
It's not even about the art of shiatsu. It's not even about the deep interest in the pressure points that may relieve tension.
Couldn't care less.
It's just, I'm going to be someone's most mind-blowing partner.
Yeah, I was going to... Don Juan de Marca, this is going to be like magic for someone.
Did it work?
I was engaged. I had a 5-year relish with someone, and I think that was a big part of it, was the massage element.
How old were you when you were engaged?
25. Yeah, I was 20 to 25 with someone amazing, and then ended it.
You ended it?
Yeah, I ended it, but it was a very wonderful relationship.
Do you regret it? Ending it.
No, we're still friends and she's now engaged to someone else. And I just, when I was in Canada, went to her family cottage with her and her new fiance. Very mature. I was freaking out.
I'm good, mate. So I was engaged at 21.
Were you?
Yeah.
And did you propose?
No, because he proposed. This was a guy. And what happened was, so we were engaged for a bit. And then about 2 years later, we both realized we were both gay. And he now lives with a beautiful Frenchman in France. And I love him.
And you're still friends?
I love him.
That's so
I always
nice.
Loved him.
Yeah. Yeah,
which again is a mystery for people who see these things as sort of binary and nuanced. Yeah, and then I think I've been engaged a couple of times since, but I'm not really sure.
It's so great to get engaged. It's so fun.
Fab.
Yeah, it's the best.
Always the bit before the relationship ends, right?
Yes, it's either break up or get engaged.
Well, it's either break up or get engaged and then break up for me.
But I
now see it as the death knell.
Yeah, I think I agree. But what a high on the day.
Oh, it's wonderful. I've nearly been engaged in Venice and Rome and all around the world. And you're right, there's that incredible feeling of, God, I love you, and this is over now, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because we've reached a peak experience from which we can only climb down from.
That's so true. Do you think that as time goes on and relationships evolve and stuff, that marriage will be less and less common?
Well, I think there's always a drive for people to
lock it down.
Lock something down.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, not me, actually, but a lot of people. And, you know, fair play. The estate of marriage, I mean, I think that will die out because I was delighted that civil partnership came in for heterosexual couples.
Mm.
I think it's really important for people who don't want to, you know, have their union enshrined in that patriarchal kind of system.
Yeah.
It's great. So I think still people will want to be conjoined in some official way. Some people really love that thing of getting all the family and the mates around and viewing the spectacle.
Yeah.
But I think the godly kind of tax breaks we've got you by the bollocks stuff will go, maybe.
And then people talk about how monogamy is dying and everyone's going to be polyamorous, but I actually don't think that's true. I think
I can't do. I'd love to be able to.
Yeah, I don't think I can.
But the thing, the oxytocin thing just does. Is it oxytocin?
Yeah, yeah.
It just does for me because it's another drug. You know, it's another. It's like I am locked in now.
Mm.
You know, I can't. I've never been able to do that thing where I can just be surface.
Yeah,
and I'm very envious of people who can.
I've just been doing it for the last year and a half or so, and it's been a great relief, but I feel very ready for the oxytocin again.
What's the trick to not letting the oxytocin rule everything?
I'm just, I mean, maybe I just haven't met the right
person.
That's possible. But also just being so busy. I'm afraid of emotional mess right now and pain. It's so painful when relationships
awful.
End. It's the worst, and it just completely turns you upside down, and I'm not up for that right now. I got too much to do.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hurt anyone else or get hurt. So
I don't mind being hurt.
Really?
I don't like it. I'm not inviting it, by the way, from the universe or from anybody in my near vicinity.
Yeah. I know you mean that it's cleaner to get hurt than to hurt someone. Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is awful.
But there isn't that doubt of maybe I've made a mistake. Because if you hurt someone, then you think, oh, God, I could just make this better tomorrow by fixing it and have I done the right thing
and in a way being rejected sort of plays into the old belief of, well, quite right, that's absolutely correct,
you
finally have seen the truth, which is I am shit.
Goodbye. Yeah, it's reassuring.
And you go off and you're damaged and hurt and you feel pain and you miss them, and then
everyone's nice to you and you're allowed to get really drunk and
they do that thing where they stroke your head,
which
only happens really when you're a kid. But whenever I've been like, I love that.
Mm.
But the endings, no. It's too painful. Because I don't want to feel. I mean, no one has any agency over anybody, but in that moment when you end a relationship, I think you briefly feel that you do, and that's the worst kind of pain.
Yeah, you feel like someone else's emotional well-being is totally dependent on you. It's awful.
No, I can see why you'd never want another relationship. Yeah. Now we've talked yeah. about it, I right? just wonder what the hell any of us are doing.
I know, right? But I'm romantic, and my parents are madly in love, and I want that, you know.
So how long have they been together?
I guess about 38 years or something. Yeah, and they have this movie romance. Like, they, I mean, who knows, behind closed doors.
Sure.
You know, they sleep in separate beds, but they swear they still have sex all the time, and they just seem they're really happy together. They get on well. Every day they play 3 hours of board games because they both work from home. So at 4 p.m. they have a glass of white wine and they play Scrabble and cribbage for hours. And it does cause arguments, but those are the biggest arguments that they have, are about Scrabble, because my mum says it's a luck game and my dad says absolutely not. But he gets all the vowels.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. It's a bit of luck, but then you need to be one of those nerds that just looks for very sort of tiny
niche words.
Yeah, which I never get. I mean, I love words, but I'm terrible at Scrabble.
Same, yeah.
And people are embarrassed for me. They're like, how can you have a reasonable lexicon. How can you be so shoddy? It's like, because I'm just not into it.
I play poker, and my family plays poker. Obsessed. And they trash talk. I'm just home. My mum called me a cunt. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah.
We're playing poker. I couldn't believe it.
Your mother called you a cunt.
I couldn't believe it. And then she took all my money.
That's woken Ben up.
They won all my money, my parents.
Yeah, but in the act of winning, you don't call somebody a cunt. It's in the act of losing. I know, you have the most counterintuitive parents I've ever heard of. It's just...
Yeah, she called me that early in the game, but... Yeah, it was very funny.
Does she do the whole thing with the visor, the glasses? Does she have like a sort of alter ego when she's playing?
They just, it's psychological warfare. They're like, they start saying from the beginning of the game, I've got two aces, I'm going to win. And they fuck with you and you get confused. And then every card that they get, they tell you what it is. Like, it's really,
and are they telling the truth, or it depends? Or they just
switch
it up? Depends.
They switch it up. It's so...
You need to do it right back at them.
Yeah. The only way that I ever get anywhere is
if I just deal with it.
Yeah. I just refill their wine glasses, and that's the only way I get ahead, is I stay sharp and I
love poker. It's the most mercurial, brilliant thing to play. An ex of mine went in, never played before. There was a proper game going on. You know, one of those ones where there's a ton of cash and everyone's super serious. There were a couple of pros in the room.
Wow.
And she's like, what do I do? So I just give the rough basics. They go, just feel your way cleaned up, because
really?
She wasn't frightened,
and also probably because she's unpredictable, because she's never played.
She just thinks it's hilarious.
Yeah,
she's like, I don't care. I don't know who these people are. I don't know this one's won the, you know, EPT or the whatever. I don't care. And it's just like, yeah, I'm all in. And everyone's like, what the?
Totally. And I guess it's kind of like how like if you're a black belt in karate, you can fight other black belts in karate amazingly well. But if someone comes in just flailing their arms and with waving a bat, you might...
With a jousting pole.
With a jousting pole.
Back to your safe space. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
You're welcome. But it's like a microcosm of society, poker, because there's always, as you say, there's always going to be somebody who's not going to play by the rules, not going to understand that you want to bet four times the whatever, or you know, the multiples thing and the stats and the... This one will go, ugh, bored of that. This is a game. And they remind you it's fun.
It's supposed to be fun, yeah.
Because I've been in poker games where I've just felt so tense.
Yeah.
I can't understand why I put myself up for it.
Yeah.
And then money, which I'm not particularly material. I don't, it comes and it goes and whatever, and have it if you want it. Suddenly everyone's super tense about money, and I notice I'm being tense about it, and I don't like that position either.
It's when you play, if you run out of chips, can you buy in for more?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the dangerous bit when you start.
I go around to my ex's house. We were together, like, I don't know, a long time ago. And she's married now, and her wife plays poker a lot with me, quite aggressively.
Right, yeah.
And it's like a lot of our issues are worked out. It's like, it was a long time ago. She loves you. She loves you more than anything. I'm not a threat.
Yeah.
Look at me. I'm old and tired. No, I have got two kings. And it really makes me laugh. It was the whole...
Yeah.
And we often play as a three, which is a small number for poker, but... Everything's represented.
That's really funny.
In that game.
Yeah. You could write an episode of a sitcom that all takes place around a poker table.
You could, yeah.
And everything comes out.
There you go. Yeah. It would be.
Yeah.
It was things that we've not been able to explore in the real world just get played out in a card game.
I sort of wished that Justin the Magician had taught me some poker related tricks, or a thing where you throw a card and it can stick in someone's throat or something. Like, I wish he showed me.
This isn't John Wick.
Yeah, I know.
What do you mean sticks in someone's neck?
I, you know, where you can kill someone with a card. Is that a thing?
Well, which film have you seen someone being killed with a card?
Yeah, probably some Kill Bill or something.
Can I just say there's a reason Justin doesn't teach that trick?
Yeah.
He can't come round for teach 60 murder. Quid and go, do you want to murder somebody with the Ace of Spades?
Yeah.
My niece made me watch, what's the one with Mark Ruffalo that's about lots of magicians with Jesse?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, I didn't
the
like
Illusionist
that so much.
Or something.
Yeah, the Four Horsemen. And there's Woody Harrelson just sort of chewing some scenery and phoning it in. And they're like, we're going to rob a bank tonight, everybody. And yeah.
I haven't seen that. Are you going to see The Joker? There's all this controversy.
Okay.
Talk to
what
me about
do
The
Joker.
What do
we do about that?
I know.
It's a film that I've read too much about.
Same.
Normally, because I am so into that universe, I'm at the front of a queue, you know.
And I'm into the Joker as a character, and I got excited about the trailer, and then all these think pieces started coming out, and then I read that interview with the director being a prick, and I don't know what to do.
Yeah, it's sort of, there's been a lot of stuff about it. It's a kind of love letter to incels. And,
yeah. Maybe we watch it when it comes out, so we're not giving money to the cinemas for it.
Yes, without adding to the... Imagine the box office is already... That ship has sailed. It's already smashed.
Yeah.
And I don't know. You have to look at the intent behind something and then the reception, and they can be different.
Definitely.
Although you're saying the director is a prick and maybe had that intent. I don't know.
Yeah, he's all anti-woke culture and did this interview about how comedy's dead and, you know.
Which is strange because it's never been more...
Alive.
Present and alive and exciting and...
Yeah, I feel that.
I think so. I mean, it's complexion-wise, it's changed for sure.
Yeah.
It's a thing that we started off talking about authenticity. So were you in Edinburgh this year? Did you go as a tourist?
I went
tourist?
Up for a few nights and did an improvised show.
So you learned
and saw some stuff.
That it's all about the authored experience. It's
Like
what we'll do there. Whereas, like, maybe 10 years ago, there'd be the odd dead dad show, which is obviously everyone has to do the dead dad show.
Yeah.
Now everyone is mining sometimes very traumatic stuff for laughs.
Yeah.
And I did a panel up there talking about comedy and I think that, you know, it will change again, but certainly this era will be one where the personal history was everything.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, you know, when I was starting out, it would be the guy coming on stage and literally it would be one man, one microphone, and he would tell you for an hour the various sexual positions he was enjoying with his girlfriend.
And a really high gag ratio, like
really
tons
high.
Of jokes and,
tons of jokes, all observational.
Yeah, and no, what's it called? What's the word I'm thinking of? Like all non sequiturs, no connective
tissue.
No
narrative, exactly, no one through line. But it seems to me what observational comedy was doing was going, we all do this, and trying to find community in that. And now it's, I do this.
Yeah.
And I find much more universality in the specific.
Yeah.
So I'll go see a show about somebody who might have been, you know, they were been brought up in Soweto talking about their experience of racism. But I will find more connection in that, even though I've never experienced racism. And somebody's going, isn't it funny when you go to the laundrette?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know what that's about. I guess just empathy and...
Yeah. And the more specific stuff you reveal, you find everybody has common ground. But I also am not very good at writing observational comedy, so I'm thrilled.
It's a great
time. The way it's going.
It's a perfect time for you.
Well, I love watching it. Really good observational comedy is mind-blowing because you think you've said something that I've always known but never articulated, and that's amazing. But then it's the same thing with the specific, too.
Do you still watch a lot of it? I mean, do you still go out and see people gigging? And
I wouldn't go and see just a random mixed bill night, but I'll go watch my friends all the time. Yeah, I love, who do I love? Tom Allen and John Kearns, and there's a handful of people that I'll always see. I love comedy.
And if the acting takes off, is this the beginning of, you know, a whole new... Would you do more? Is that, have you got the bug of it now? Are you kind of...
I really loved it, but the problem was that my ears turned very red. So,
in what situation?
Anytime I have to kiss someone, and in fact, talking about it now, you'll see they'll start to go red just from me talking about it.
I go super red if I, if I go on a date, I'm so red. I literally, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'm having a heart attack.
They had to, like, the makeup lady had to keep pausing and then coming in with this paintbrush and like thick foundation on my burning hot red ears.
But you knew they went red and you still wrote kissing scenes.
So many kissing scenes. It's a love story. And then, so that was humiliating. And then even in the edit, even though I was wearing a thick layer of foundation on my ears, we still had to dip into like the VFX budget to tone down my ears.
No, yeah, they painted you in post.
They painted my ear, toned them down because they were so red. So I have to get a handle on that. That there must be some mindfulness, cognitive thing I can do to stop my ears going red. I felt like it's a show about a relationship. And I thought it would be like a conspicuous omission if there was,
yeah.
Because if it was a straight couple, then and also I'm looking at the landscape of shows like that now, and like Fleabag and Girls and stuff. And there's so much sex. So I thought it would be weird if I didn't have some in it. But yeah, it was really scary.
Yeah, but you're right. It's sort of it is a truth. And also,
I don't want to seem squeamish about it though. But you know what I mean. So I felt like I had to. But then sitting in the edit and watching myself have sex is I'll never have sex again. Lights off, I'm in. It's hell.
Yeah, that's full on, isn't it?
It's
but you're right, you kind of have to do it because it's part of the authenticity of the thing.
Yeah, normalize it a bit. But yes, sitting in the edit in general, just being watched. Do you watch yourself on screen?
God, no.
It's hard, right?
I do some ADR, and Mel had gone in 2 days before and just went silent. It was like she just dipped off the radar. And it's really? Like this never happens. It's like we are just
constantly
kind of hive mind interconnected, one being. And I thought something bad's happened.
Yeah.
Really bad. And I went in 2 days later and she texted me on the way and going, are you welcome to what's happened to us? And it was just this enormous fucking screen with my enormous fucking face on it. I was going,
God.
In my head, because I behave like a 17-year-old,
yeah.
I appreciate life like a 17-year-old, I haven't noticed that the edifice is so cataclysmically kind of collapsed.
And there it hasn't. Was. It hasn't.
It was just like, Christ. And I couldn't even start the ADR session. I said, I have to phone Miggins. I was like going, now I understand. She's going, look at my face. Look at my face. I'm like, look at my face. What's that? And that's all we did until they wheeled me back into the studio to kind of provide lines. But
oh,
I hate it. So
yeah.
I will, if I do a documentary thing, I'll script it, but I would just say, just drop me in 5 seconds before so that I will just do that bit because I don't want to see what happens. I don't want to.
Yeah.
And also because I'm endlessly, I don't remember things from the past. I'm so in the moment.
Yeah.
That I just want to be on to the next thing. So it's like, I don't want to catch what I did a year ago or 6 months ago.
Yeah, that makes sense.
This is exciting now and everything is of interest and
yeah.
Which is profoundly annoying for anyone near me, but no, I'm not a fan. I always say a dog doesn't return to its own vomit, and that's how I feel about my work.
Oh my God.
You know.
Yeah.
I kind of, if everyone else says it's okay and I've employed those people or I work with those people and trust them,
yeah.
That's good enough for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But sometimes I think it does make me a I think it's good you were in your own edit and you gave it that because it's your project.
Yeah.
And you have to author every moment of it.
I just can't believe that that's how my face moves when I talk and how I walk. And yeah, but I guess I did become desensitized to it by the end, but it was months of like not breathing and just sitting. But yeah.
So you get that. So which was the most rewarding part, the writing? Because they say it's a third each, isn't it? The show is made writing, performing, and then editing. Which was the favorite bit for you?
I thought I'd love the edit, but I hated the edit. But no, I think filming it was amazing. And I wrote it with my best friend, Joe, who's a really nice boy. And we had a really good time. We watched The Chase every day on our lunch break. Love The Chase. And, just ate good food and hung out at my flat and played games. And it was great. And then, filming was amazing. It had lots of friends in it and it was incredible. I mean, it's what you dream of. I dreamed about it since I was five, you know. So I just tried to be in the moment and take a step back and think how incredible and lucky I am.
And did you manage to do that in achieving?
No. I was in floods of tears all the time. No, I cried a bit from fear.
Did you?
Just like quietly in my trailer, I'd be like, cool guys, I'm just going to have a quick, make a phone call and then go have a little cry. I was very overwhelmed and scared. I was in like every scene and just like, I don't know how I'm doing. And you just don't know if you're doing well at all.
It's like when I do, because I don't act very often, but the language is so different.
Yeah.
And you don't really understand what they're talking about. And it's like you've just arrived in Portugal and everyone's having a conversation and laughing and you're like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Totally.
Shot sizes and lenses and...
Yeah, I remember doing one thing and then the director was basically saying, okay, she was like, okay, great, let's go again this time. Can you do it like better, kind of? or can you do it hotter or something? And I just had this panic rising. So I was like, I've just done it the best I can possibly do it. And I don't know what you mean. I don't know how to be hotter, you know?
But it's kind of, there's something inauthentic in essence about acting. And
yeah.
If you've tried... And yet this story is an authentic representation of parts of your psyche. So those two things are like attacking one another.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel that when I'm acting, is like, I will have what I feel is a truthful experience, but really I'm only having it as Sue. I'm not having it as this supposed, you know.
Yeah.
The supposed character that's supposedly in love with this other character. And
absolutely. Very strange.
And I don't want to go there because I don't want to really fall in love with an actor because that's terrible.
Yeah.
And of course that is what happens. It's like some people just...
They fall in love.
Yeah, they just do it.
I think you have to fall in love in the moment and then you have to build up a little brick wall at the end of the day.
I can't wait to see a show. So you think February?
I think February and March. Yeah, on Channel 4 here and Netflix everywhere else.
And then, what's it called?
It's called Feel Good because that's what I'm trying to do all the time.
That sounds perfect.
Find a way to feel good. Yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so nice to talk to you. I'm such a huge fan. So
likewise.
I'm very honoured.
Don't be silly. But it's been wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Sue.
Thanks for listening. As always, you can post reviews on Apple Podcasts. You can post abuse to my Twitter feed at Sue Perkins. All are welcome. All the music in this episode was provided by Waiting for Smith. And if you want to check out more Waiting for Smith, then go to Spotify. I'll be there if you want me to. When the marble has turned to clay and the people have all turned grey and the Romans don't walk so slow, I'll be there if you want me to. I'll be there if you want me to.